SBC Media.
SBC Summit Barcelona is where you can experience the entire global industry coverage under one roof. Join 10,000 industry professionals for 3 days of game-changing conversation and education. Get your tickets now at sbcevents.com.
Welcome to iGaming Daily, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe, supported by the Canadian Gaming Summit, bringing you Canada's premier annual conference and exhibition for gaming and sports betting senior executives from across Canada and beyond.
Last year, North Carolina's effort to legalize commercial sports betting failed in the Senate by a single vote. This year, though, state lawmakers were able to get a sports betting bill through both chambers, albeit with substantial revisions. The state Senate approved HB 347 on Thursday, and it now heads back to the House, which is expected to concur with the measure. On today's episode of iGaming Daily, we'll dive into how the bill progressed this year and why there could be a legal challenge in its future. I'm Jessica Wellman, editor of SBC Americas, joined by my senior journalist, Charlie Horner. Charlie, welcome back for more civics discussions.
I can't wait.
I know. It's a nice American. Poor Charlie was like, I love politics. I find it super interesting at the beginning of this legislative season. And now I'm not sure if you still feel the same way.
it's been interesting. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, North Carolina has been an interesting one. It had been kind of quiet for a while. You know, it passed through the House at the end of March. And basically for a month, just kind of sat there and didn't really have a lot of movement until a couple of weeks ago when it kind of roared back to life and very quickly made its way through the Senate. It made its way through the Senate with quite a few changes from what the bill was originally set up to be. Charlie, why don't you run down kind of where we started and where we're at in terms of the specifics of the bill?
Okay, so I believe in the original form, the bill looked a lot like the one that narrowly missed out last year. You know, I think there was a 10 to 12 online sports books allowed, commercial retail betting. The tax rate was 14%. But like just as alluded to, there has been a number of amendments throughout the process. So that tax rate is no longer 14%. It's moved up to 18%. There's also an amendment to add pari mutuel betting in there. There's also been, interestingly, this one, really interesting, crypto deposits is in there, which I believe only Wyoming has that.
I think that's right. It's one, you know, generally for anti-money laundering reasons, regulated sports books and casinos, both land-based and retail, just don't touch it. So I was, you know, you kind of half listen to these meetings as things are happening. I hear crypto and I just kind of did the full head whip of, what did you just say? So that was definitely very surprising.
I guess one of those, it's surprising that that amendment made it through and then it was actually voted on and passed in the Senate eventually. Because like you say, any mention of crypto and it does sort of perk the ears up.
Yeah, so those all went through, no promo credit deductions. Yeah. There was an amendment to allow for historical horse racing machines in North Carolina, but that one got stripped out at some point in the process. I'll be honest, it went through, I believe, 3 different committees on the Senate side. And so sometimes it's a little bit hard to keep track of when things came in and when things came out. But those are the basic components of the bill. Because it changed so materially, it does have to go back to the House for what is called concurrence, because the version that the House passed is so materially different to what the Senate passed. And we thought we were going to be in a bit of a pickle because it seemed for a minute like the House was not going to concur. The House majority, or House Speaker, rather, Tim Moore, had told a local outlet that the House was as recently as Wednesday, not going to concur because they wanted to throw in more stuff. Greed kicked in. So they wanted to maybe add a full casino provision to bring casinos to the state and end up, you know, essentially taking House members and Senate members to find a meet in the middle version of their two bills. He very quickly walked that back Thursday, though, which does kind of open the door for this to just march on through to Governor Roy Cooper's desk where he is expected to sign it. So next week, House should concur, then governor should sign, then it goes into law. When does it take effect, Charlie?
I believe it's no earlier than June.
January.
January the 8th, yeah, and no later than next June. So, yeah, a nice little six-month window there that we inevitably going to be waiting and praying that they switch on.
Yeah, the previous one said within 12 months of the bill passing, so this one just kind of bumps it back a little bit to give them of the law taking effect, I should say. It gives them a little more time. I said this when we talked about Kentucky. You're talking about a state that does not have a lot of gambling infrastructure. There are casinos, but they're run by tribes. There actually is already retail sports betting in the state at these tribal casinos. But I think in states like this, you can't just jump in and suddenly be ready to go with online sports betting. You know, the Kentucky bill takes effect and goes into law in June. End of this month. And I think the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission is super eager to get regs out and get up and running and try to be done in time for football season. But for those of you who keep track of horse racing, they're a little busy dealing with the fact that a tremendous number of horses have recently died at Churchill Downs. And they want to know what's going on there. So it's just, there are other things going on. So to me, I'm always happy when they push things on these deadlines down the line. A little bit. So where do we stand now on sports betting states? So Kentucky, we've got North Carolina and might launch this year. I mean, if they do, I think it'll be November, December. North Carolina won't start until 2024. When is Vermont?
Good question. I think Vermont could also be early next year. I think in terms of launches this year, we're looking at Maine, potentially, if they can sort those regulations out.
If they
out.
Can find anyone who wants to do it. Yeah. And yeah, you should mention this. If they can sort out, you know, the brouhaha, if I may, of what is going on there. What happened with the Maine regulator, Charlie?
So he was he forced to resign or he stepped aside because he caused a little bit of a kerfuffle on Twitter with a few comments that he made. I don't have the tweets up in front of me right now, but I believe that they were a little on the contentious side. And yeah, he had to step aside and leave it to somebody else. But I mean, the main regulatory process so far hasn't been smooth sailing. And that feels like a little bit of a microcosm of some of the chaos that's going on over there.
Well, yeah. And then it's not the best option for operators, to be honest. So in Maine, you need to partner with a tribal operator who is guaranteed 50% of what you make. Then you've got to pay 20% in taxes, leaving, I may be, of course, dear producers, fact check this for me and make me look better in the aftermath. You guys know. Essentially, it's somewhere between 30 and 40% is all an operator gets to keep. And as we've talked about in Massachusetts, which is actually a pretty easy state to make money in, people are choosing to not go into certain states. And I think Maine is one where I if I'm an operator, you look at, you know, Bet Rivers and Rush Street in Connecticut pulling out because you have to keep cutting up that pie and all you get is 30% at the end of the day. It's just not the most lucrative place to go and try and make money. Not to mention the fact that Maine, not exactly the most populous state.
I think one of the main things is that now we're getting into the states that aren't the biggest states. Like you say, we don't have terrible amounts of gambling infrastructure there either, which is why it was surprising that, you know, there were murmurs that the House was going to try and throw in iCasino and all this extra stuff in the North Carolina bill, because we found out so far over the last year or so that, you know, passing online casino legislation is really difficult, and for them to, you know, it's essentially risk throwing it all to the wayside for an online casino expansion would have been a very risky move, I think. And But I think, yeah, we are now onto those smaller states with less gambling infrastructure. So I feel like we're going to hit these hiccups in the road that we've seen in Maine and elsewhere.
Yeah, Maine has a population of 1.3 million people for those keeping track at home. Yeah, and I love the point you just made about North Carolina, which is this is a state where we barely got sports betting through the finish line and we just lost because there was so much kind of religious exception to the law and hesitancy to bring gambling into the state. And now that you're like, well, if we're going to get it through, might as well throw in everything in the kitchen sink is just a weird mindset. You know, I was very excited. As soon as I hear the words family foundation, I'm always excited in these hearings because then you get the inevitable religious invocations and things. So Charlie got to hear a little bit of the family foundation testimony in the first Senate committee hearing. What did you make of your first experience to hearing those who object to gambling on moral grounds in the U.S.?
They're interesting characters. And of course, it's not to say that, you know, everyone has their own religious beliefs and they can, you know, that's first and foremost, you got to respect people's religious beliefs. However, they really, really are anti-gambling. And some of the quotes that I heard from people from the Christian Action League or the North Carolina Family Policy Council was, really on the hyperbolic side. So it was interesting to see.
Yeah. The next Senate hearing, the Senate floor debate, I was just like, just so you all know, it took less than 6 minutes for someone to start quoting scripture as to why we should not be bringing sports betting into the state. There is a chance that sports betting into the state does face a legal challenge, though. Ready for your civics lesson for the day on top of the ones we've already had? Basically, Charlie, here's the new thing. In North Carolina, if an income tax rate is greater than 7%, it is technically unconstitutional. So this 18% tax on the revenue of sports betting could potentially face a legal challenge that it is higher than that threshold. Senator Lisa Grafstein, who did oppose the bill, tried to tack on an amendment during the third reading and final vote in the Senate that would essentially say if one piece of the legislation was found unconstitutional, the whole piece would be deemed unconstitutional, what they call severability. However, that was tabled and voted down, essentially. So an operator could come in and still challenge the tax rate without jeopardizing their license. So she was making the point, if we want to make sure that nobody challenges this, then you tie it to the licensing so that the operator's like, well, I'm just going to pay the tax rate. Do I think a DraftKings or a FanDuel is going to come in and legally challenge this? No. I really don't. I think everybody is kind of happy to just have it in the state at what I would say is a fairly reasonable rate, you know, 18%. You want the promo deductions, but, you know, so be it. I think we're getting to the point where states are kind of hip to that game now. But just so you guys are aware, there is an outside chance that there could be a court challenge to this, perhaps by a smaller operator or somebody who didn't get into the state.
I think, you know, optically, the industry hasn't had a great year this year so far. So if there was a legal challenge because of a tax rate that, like you've said, Jess, isn't completely ridiculous, it's not a 51% like New York or Rhode Island, it's 18%, it wouldn't be a great look. But then I can kind of see why there are certain legislators who are pushing for this, because if it is written in the Constitution that it's a 7% tax rate, then there are likely to be challenges there or arguments. But I think there's another legal lesson where you know, there's probably a difference between personal income tax and gross gaming revenue. So, I mean, I can see why that could easily be quashed as well.
Yeah, and I mean, there's potential to do maybe something like what Tennessee has set the new standard for, which is to put the tax on handle rather than on revenue. then it, you know, technically isn't an income tax. It's like an operating tax, essentially. So that's potentially one way they could take it as well. You know, I guess kind of a question to wrap this up on. Who do we think goes into North Carolina? You've got between 10 and 12 operators. Charlie, anybody you think besides the major players are going to make a play for North Carolina?
Well, we've seen this a lot this year is that we saw it in Massachusetts for sure, that there are all these licenses available and then they don't all necessarily get issued and there's not enough interest. But I think we're going to see the big players, aren't we? We might see someone like a Bet365 go in there potentially. We might see a Better go in there. So there's a lot of options because, you know, it's not the smallest state in the country. So there's ample opportunity for you know, sharing that market share. So I could see a good 8 to 10 of those licenses go in. I don't know what your thoughts on that are, Jess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they max out, to be honest. We're just seeing that there aren't necessarily 12 operators that want to go into every single state. But like you said, I think those major players, Fanatics, who is now up to 4 states that they're in beta. So they're making progress towards having 12 to 15 by football season, I would think would obviously go in there. For those of you who maybe don't know as much about the American South, like North Carolina is a good state for sports. They're very, you know, college basketball heavy, you know, with UNC and Duke. That's kind of the big sport that they tend to have the most rooting interest for. But you've got some pro teams in there like the Carolina Panthers and the Carolina Hurricanes, as well as, you know, strong participation in the ACC on college football, that there it is a sports happy kind of state with a strong fan base there that would be interested in it. That, yeah, I think we'll see just the major players and go from there. You know, I think Bally's, you almost have to start to question if they're going to keep going into states because they were supposed to be live at this point in Massachusetts. And we're still waiting for them to roll things out. As I joked to someone on Twitter, apparently they're too busy, you know, putting new poker rooms into casinos. They're about to close for renovation. So priorities all over the place over at Bally's. God bless them. So we'll see. You know, that Fanatics news, by the way, we did get kind of the first glimpse of their revenues out of Ohio. Really, really big grain of salt, though. They are in a beta invite only kind of phase at the moment. They did about, you know, 400,000 in handle. They gave out about 200,000 in promo credit. And then, you know, the revenue, they held like 28%, but that's really just, you know, $125,000. So very small micro sample of things. But what I did notice they're doing is their signup offers bet $5, get 200 in free bets, which is very different from the deposit matches we've seen elsewhere. And probably, I would assume, more in line with what we, you know, the kind of offers UK offers, right? Just maybe a slightly bigger number.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, this is, yeah, here you might get bet £5 and get £50 in free bets. So yeah, it's a lot more like a UK approach to it. But yeah, it's interesting how they've come out and given us some data on those beta testing, because, you know, I mean, there's not much you can read into it, I suppose, like you said, because they're going to make a big splash when they go live eventually. But yeah, I guess, do you want to dive into those Ohio numbers a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, quick overview of something to, you can get the full, you know, rundown on SBC Americas, but it pains me to say lackluster and $500 million in the same sentence, but it was the worst, huge quotation marks around worst month yet for Ohio. For April, they did $520 million in handle, which is still, you know, most people's best month. And as usual, FanDuel, DraftKings really dominated everything. Roughly 70% of the market. Bet365 still spending quite a bit on promotional credit, right behind DraftKings, and they are holding their own in fourth place. But to like put a little context to it, FanDuel did 185 million in handle. DraftKings did 161 million in handle. Then third place is BetMGM with 38 million in handle. So it's quite the also ran once you get past the top two. Bet365 and BetMGM pretty neck and neck. Tipico still spending big to maintain its spot in Checks Notes eighth place. You know, Fanatics is the one that's interesting. Better continues to just really not get a lot of traction. They operated at a loss this month, as did MVG Bet, Parks, and Betfred. So the better one, they could, are you, dad joke coming, they could do better.
Well done.
Charlie, well done. Anything else you're working on to draw attention to over at SBC Americas?
Well, there's a lot of things going on in college sports over the last month or so. And so we've had a little update today. Just the Southeastern Conference is switching its mind a little bit towards how to tackle this problem of integrity issues in college sports. And it's a really interesting story. It's just centered around this one dad, really, who's been in contact with a few of the coaches. But I think one of the suggestions was that an injury report was to be published before each fixture, but I think the director of the Southeastern Conference has sort of rejected the idea and saying that it won't really tackle the heart of the issue. So the Southeastern Conference are looking at solutions to the problem, but I guess the brainstorming will continue.
Yeah. The injury report, by the way, that's a takeaway from the NFL, which issues injury reports and designations that everybody gets to see, and you can't obfuscate really who's being injured. So coaches didn't seem super thrilled about that one either. You can read more about that on SBC Americas. And another thing you can read about college, I'm going to do a quick pitch for, I wrote up a presentation from the conference I was at in Las Vegas last week from Dr. Timothy Fong of UCLA, really diving into how his patients at the university are expressing extreme anxiety about online player abuse in the world of college betting now that sports betting is a little more prevalent. So check out both of those and be sure to keep an eye out for the next time one of us is on an episode of iGaming Daily. Until then, we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of iGaming Daily, brought to you in conjunction with the Canadian Gaming Summit, being held at the Metro Toronto Convention Centre on the 13th to the 15th of June. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders Magazine. Happy reading.